Hello, I'm just going to do a wee short intro because I feel like some of them have been like 5 minutes long recently, and that's too long. If you're back, I hope you enjoyed part one. Please share this episode because I think this episode, maybe people looking at it, is just like two previous guests, and obviously Jean was on last week. Rebecca's been on a few times before, so I think a lot of people are thinking maybe it's nothing new, but I think there is a lot of new stuff covered in this one, because I don't know, I just think we're really head on with the stuff we want to talk about. There's a lot more heavy stuff in this one, so be prepared for that. I'll have written all the different issues that it deals with in the little blurb, so if you're concerned about that, maybe go have a wee read on there before you dive in. Thanks to Jean and Rebecca for spending their Sunday evening a couple weeks ago with me, getting pretty pissed, and yeah, enjoy. Promise and only had a short break and didn't have multiple drinks and rattle shite for ages.
No, we did not.
Hell, Rebecca, we're getting professional in this.
I feel like we're real people now.
Yeah.
I'm an adult.
So, fuck, this is going to be the best one to open with, I think.
Oh my god, what the fuck is it?
So, it's one that we've definitely talked about before. Well,
Animorphs.
Please, we'll get there at the end. But it's one that I've been thinking about a lot recently, and it's mental health and alcohol.
Oh fuck, we're going there.
Yeah.
Speaking of the sponsor of this,
hi, can we just say thank you to Malbec, Strongbow, Bulmers, and I don't know what the fuck you guys drank
any
about me.
Any fucking vodka. Any fucking vodka.
Drinking Carlsberg, and we did shots
of
vodka.
We had Carlsberg. We had Russian Standard.
Welcomed him with a shot earlier.
This is my culture.
I'm white trash. It's my culture. Do you want to kick us off? Because
sure.
You've been thinking about it a lot.
I have, yeah. Well, I just don't know, like...
I'm sorry, it's totally off topic, but I have a bunch of flowers in a random...
That's
what's the
there.
Word? Plastic bottle.
It's a sparkling water bottle cut in half.
Yes, I have a...
Does this make me like indie fan pop idol now?
No, this makes me on a fucking tangent. But yes, I have a bunch of flowers in my house in a plastic bottle. Anyway, I feel like a grown up now because someone else has it. Go on, alcohol.
Well, I'm gonna go for a side point with it.
Uh-huh.
Rebecca's got a photo of her and her partner framed.
Yeah.
And you guys have been together for how long?
On and off for 14 months.
But how long have you been living together?
Blair has lived with me for 3.5 months now.
Okay, cool. So like, I think me and Fiona have lived together, we've been here for 8 years, and we've lived together for 6. And I think we only just got a framed photo of the two of us, and I think there's two other people in it.
No one lived with me.
We said at the pub last night, well not last night, the night before, Nathan and I turned around and I was really depressed and I didn't want to leave the house, but we had a lot of adult things to do that I was quite committed to. So Blair and I left the house and we got a joint bank account and a hamster. And we mentioned to Nathan at the pub, and he was like, yeah, you're doing better than us. And I was like, fuck's sake.
Well, no one lives with me, and...
Do you have a hamster?
I do not have a hamster. No one lives with me, and I only have my own bank account. But my mum brought me a bunch of flowers last week.
Fuck yes, winning. But on the top of alcohol before Nathan starts... No, because this does bring it back into relevancy. Blair bought me those flowers as a good luck at returning to your new club for stripping, and I decided not to go because I was hungover and depressed.
No, I was just going to say, like, I put down alcohol mental health, but it was more to raise another point that I sort of had, was that, like, I don't know about you guys, but sometimes I feel like the better I get at managing something, the worse... Like, the more guilt I associate with it.
Mm.
So,
yep.
Alcohol is the point I've put to me that is that even though I would say now I probably
drink less than I have in the past,
mm-hmm.
I feel more guilty about it. Do you
I would
mean?
Agree.
Another example I would use would be exercise, is that I exercise like 5-6 times a week now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I still, even though I'm doing it more and I'm employing better than I've ever been in my adult life, I still feel more guilty if I don't do it or if
yes,
I feel like I'm not working hard enough.
But then I think that's the it's like the OCD part of mental illness that a lot of people have, if not full diagnosis and like a full separate issue. I think everybody who's mentally unwell is so preoccupied by what they are and aren't achieving
yes,
when you start to do well and then you maybe, you know, in your mind aren't achieving as well as you did the day before, you get super fucking paranoid about
right,
it.
Right, like, you're studying law. Why aren't you studying medicine, Jean?
Mm. Well, I did law for a year and I did that to make my parents impressed. God rest their soul. I think like all I've done is subtweet them this podcast. But, like, I changed obviously because I've made a mistake. And like people that I didn't even give a shit about, people that I just lived in halls with, were like, "Oh yeah, you'll never get a job." And I was like, "Bitch, I'd never get a job as a lawyer. I fucking hate this shit." Like,
or I already have a job. I make more than all of you. And
yeah, same, like, fucking same. Uh-huh. But I think for drinking specifically, because that's what we've talked about.
Yeah.
I think it is no shock to anybody who has ever met me, who has ever been on my social media, who has ever heard anything about me, that I have a drug and alcohol dependency. And I'm very open about it. And no, I'm not to the point where I wake up in the, you know, the morning and I need a drink. I don't drink every day of the week. I certainly don't abuse drugs every day of the week.
Mm-hmm.
But fuck me, if you put it in front of me and I'm in a mood, bitch, I will fucking take it.
Do you
know,
drink on your own?
I have done. Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely. Again, with a partner living with me, I have to be a lot more culpable for my behaviour because there's somebody else there witnessing it. But yeah, absolutely. I know for a fact that, you know, if I'm anxious, I'll have a drink. If I'm depressed, I'll have a drink. If I'm happy, I'll celebrate by having a drink. And as much as I think the thing is it goes undetected and it becomes a joke and it's funny and it's cute and it becomes part of your aesthetic in a very acceptable way. Because in Scotland there is such a culture of drinking.
Yeah.
And student life. Absolutely.
I'm still 23. I'm not that old. It's still acceptable for me to be an asshole on a night out and to be a lush and to, you know, vomit
it's funny,
or whatever.
It's funny if you're sick in the street, someone will make an Instagram story of it.
I mean, I'll be honest, I haven't done that ever, but like, you know.
No, I don't have
that's
that
simply because I'm under the radar. Like, but no, absolutely, you know, if I come home wankered and I can't remember 50% of a night out, I mean, I remember doing, I mean, I think we've all been there where we've done these ridiculous things online or at the doctor's office of how to tell if you drink problematically, if you score.
Do you score more than 3?
Oh, yes. Fuck yeah. Uh-huh. And one of the questions is, you know, how much you drink per week, obviously in litres is an obvious one, but the
I heard that GPs double that. Whatever you put in, if you're under 25, if you put 6 drinks, they'll double it.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone's lying.
And this is why it pisses me off, is that I'm really honest at the sexual health clinic and at the GP and in anything. I'm just, I don't lie. It's part of my AA recovery that I do actually fulfil other than the non-drinking. I am a very honest person. But shit, if they're doubling that, then fuck me up. No wonder they think I'm awful. But no, I'm very honest. And it's a huge problem. It's a huge dependency. And I can't honestly count on 2 hands how many times I've said to myself, to a partner, to a friend, I'm going to go to AA, I'm going to try it out, I'm going to see what it's like. Mm-hmm. They offered me therapy for my BPD on the NHS, but only under the proviso that I attended therapy for drinking addiction, and I refused to go because I was like, drinking's not the problem, I drink because I self-medicate because I need therapy. And yes, there's a huge amount of truth to that. There's a huge amount of truth. It's a vicious cycle. But also, I think a lot of it was because I knew enough myself, I didn't want to give up drinking because I'm too dependent on it.
But then, see, I'm going to say something. I don't know whether you might not.
Go on.
Like, but I wouldn't necessarily say maybe alcohol is what you're addicted to or what
got
alcohol dependency. What I would say is that I felt very much like that I was alcohol dependent, but I felt like I drank too much and that I had a sort of dependency issue, not alcoholism, but similar to what you're saying, right?
Yeah.
And then I did that boxing thing 2 years ago where I had the fight in I'm sorry, I know boxing's boring to talk about.
I love MMA, come on.
But like,
I don't know the difference.
But yeah.
You punch cunts and you kick cunts.
The
and
episode
you, and
of Simpsons and Glow.
But
anyway, go on.
Pretty much my point was that, you know, I would have associated myself with having an alcohol thing. And then, but when I went to do boxing, I knew I couldn't drink because you can't really drink.
Yeah.
And uh-huh. sleep training for a block. Because
you'll be fucked.
Yeah. And then, like, as soon, but uh-huh. then as soon as I had something else to focus on, and
yeah.
I put in my mind that, oh, you can't drink and you're not going to drink for 7 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
It was easy, like honestly easy, and I feel like you would probably be in the same position, Rebecca.
No, but I've done that in the past. I think the thing is that I say I'm an alcoholic because I'm a fucking alcoholic, and I refuse to be dainty footed about the issue, and I admit it in and of myself. But when I body built for 7 months, I'm lucky if I had 4 pints in that amount of time, and I was still chronically fucking unwell. You know, there are plenty of times, I mean, again, like I maybe only drink twice a week, but the correspondence is that I drink when I go outside my house.
Uh-huh.
As long as I'm in my house and I'm in an environment which is natural and safe with people that are natural and safe to me in my mind, I don't even think about drinking. But the minute I need to leave the house and go to work or meet a friend or, you know, do anything uh-huh. that is classed as normal behaviour, that anxiety kicks in, that self-deprecating kicks in. And you know what? I'm not addicted to drinking in a lot of ways. I'm addicted to not feeling pain and anxiety.
Yes, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. Do you ever feel it's kind of like that thing, like, it's circumstantial almost? Like,
absolutely.
You think about, like, I think it was the Vietnam War or something, like, soldiers, American soldiers over there got, like, really addicted to heroin.
Uh-huh.
But when they came back home, because it wasn't the same environment,
they
didn't have a problem coming off it because it wasn't that environment.
I completely agree.
Absolutely.
I completely agree. I really don't feel any need to abuse drugs or drink
mm-hmm.
when I am by myself or with people that I really integrally trust, like my partner or like family even. But, you know, as I say, it doesn't need to be alcohol. Do you know what? If alcohol was illegal and very expensive and cocaine was legal and really cheap to access, mm-hmm. I would be abusing that. Do you know what I mean? Whatever I can get my hands on that will numb the fact of my own existence when I am forced to deal with a situation I personally find uncomfortable, that's what I will abuse. But because alcohol is so cheap, so legal, I mean, shit, I live across a co-op, I live above a pub.
We all
I mean,
live
it's
across
there.
From a co-op or something terrible.
It's just
the
way to say it, something back to what we were saying before about Scottish culture. And it is
absolutely.
A massive part of Scottish culture is that if you go out to, I mean, like, I don't think I've ever went to meet a friend in a coffee shop.
To be fair, but
I know.
Rarely.
It's the pub, you know what I mean? It's,
we're fancy.
It's the pub. And
Sex
the
City.
I've seen 9 out of 10 times when I arrange to do something with my pals, out with it being exercise, because
mm-hmm.
I would say I do exercise with my friends quite a lot. But out with that, if I'm doing something social, we're probably going to go to the pub, or we're probably going to go to a gig where we're drinking, or we're going to be going to a show.
Uh-huh.
And it's not even just that we'll go to that place and have a couple of drinks while we're there. It's like, so what are you doing before? Well, come up with mine for a few drinks.
Yeah.
So we'll go yours for a few drinks. I mean, Archie's for a few drinks, do you know what I mean? It's
But I think the thing is that whether somebody has a mental health issue or not, I think a shitload of the population in Scotland have a really problematic drinking issue, whether they want to agree with that or not. Because when you're drinking more than, I mean, what is the limit? Like 7 units a week for women and fucking whatever it is for guys.
9 or 10 for guys.
I mean, that's like a couple of drinks on a Monday night if you're lucky, like 3 or 4 wines, and that's your week.
Uh-huh.
Like, in terms of health, physically, everybody is going above and beyond, like binge drinking at the weekend, like shouldn't culture, like you said earlier, Jean. Like,
it's nothing or it's 10. It's,
do you know what I mean? Like, folk, none of it's healthy. But I think the important difference is that folk that are doing that for fun or to fit in isn't quite the same as folk who are doing it to fit in and to, you know, have fun, but also because they feel like they are more fun, more comfortable, more confident.
Do
you know what I mean?
Like, maybe, like, I don't know, are y'all from towns or cities or like rural areas?
I'm from Montrose, which is quite a small town.
So I'm like rural Kilkoddy.
I'm like Shire, I'm Aberdeenshire. And when I worked in the pub when I was like 18, and then again in like uni holidays and stuff, it was the same 5 old men who were coming in. And do you know what? It was therapy for them. It was, they were talking about their problems to each other, to me. I was a fucking 19-year-old barmaid, but like, That was therapy for them. That was sitting down and having a chat and having a drink and then going home and dealing with it, sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But like, I feel like there's not such an open dialogue for especially a lot of working class men. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Whereas like going to the pub, it's a very male environment. But like, that's where they kind of, that's their release. That's their therapy sort of
absolutely.
Thing.
Absolutely. But I think the thing is, and it's interesting to know, because I had a partner who had said to me, we'd had a bit of a bust up, and he turned around, we had been drinking in the pub, and I said, I'm going to go home, you have a think, and I'll catch you in a bit. And he turned around to me and said, you know, look, I'm really sorry about what I did and everything, you know, whatever. And that was great. But he also said, I was looking in the pub, and it was an old man pub that we'd been drinking in. Yeah. He was like, it's the same people every night that are in here, and they come here and they're by themselves and they're lonely and they're drinking and they're having these conversations. And I personally feel that if I keep going the way that I'm going, that's what I'm going to be like when I'm 50 yeah. plus. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a problem, that it is great that people of a certain demographic are finding access to a sort of therapy in those situations, but they are doing that because that's literally their only option.
That's the only option. Yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Not to go off topic, but like, certainly because I'm from a rural area, the highest suicide rates are with farmers and with vets,
mm-hmm.
with people who are isolated,
mm-hmm.
but have the means. They've got the guns, they've got the drugs.
Yeah.
They need an outlet like that. They
Absolutely.
Need a local pub. They need something just to like get the shit off their
Have
chest.
A conversation.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Do you know what I
mean? It's just opening the conversation is sometimes enough for a lot of folk.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know
I think
mean?
That's the irony about mental health, is that people are very afraid of it, people who suffer from it and
uh-huh.
people who don't, and it's so stigmatised. And the reality is that something as simple as, hi, how are you? And
yes.
an actual conversation or
if that
a
breaks
hug.
Someone's down in tears and they're
you know
like,
I mean?
Fuck, no one's asked them that in 20 years sort of thing.
I fucking agree with you.
I think you raise a point as well, that in some ways the three of us sitting here aren't the people that are most at risk from
mm-hmm.
acting.
Because we're open about
yeah,
talking
yeah.
about
it.
Yeah, yeah.
I agree.
It is these... You know, these
isolated
these guys, these, you know, stiff upper lip guys in the pub.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
That is so Aberdonian as well.
Yeah. And
it's so
Scottish, isn't it?
Uh-huh.
Intrinsic with the Scottish culture,
mm-hmm.
and Britishness in general, not just Scotland.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Whole UK, like, is that culture of not
stiff upper lip, just get on with it.
Yeah.
But you did yourself, Nathan, an interview with somebody about male stoicism and the risk associated with that, about mental health problems and about suicide, and your article and your contribution to that was fantastic. And
yeah.
I mean, you should fucking talk about that. Fuck, highlight it, man.
Well, the Metro article.
Yeah, because I read it and it was amazing. It was really
yeah,
great.
You fucking big deal.
Nah, I was.
Yeah,
I just
sent you that tweet, man.
I just recorded you. Yeah, yeah, I wish you'd hit me up with that. But no, like, those kind of things are really cool, because that was like 10 people, do you know what I mean? That's not
yeah.
one guy, that's
mm-hmm.
not two guys.
But it was all totally different guys.
It was, and it was, do you know what it was beautiful about that was, when I read that, there was things that those other guys had written that I
mm-hmm.
toyed away to, and I was like, fuck, I wish I'd said that, because I'm,
yeah.
and you know, and then I don't think I read one account on that 10, I don't think it was one of those where I read something, there wasn't one thing in that
mm-hmm.
their account that I didn't also relate to.
I agree,
And
yeah.
there wasn't one guy there who I didn't want to, like, it's like, wish I could just be like
mm-hmm.
have a chat with, do you know what I mean? Like,
and there wasn't one guy there that I had read where I went, oh, I haven't ever had a male friend or a male
mm-hmm.
partner who felt this exact same way but never wanted to talk about it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And do you know, there was a guy on there that talked about he got paranoid about contracting HIV,
mm-hmm.
and that was the thing that I had for years, and I didn't want to tell anyone about it because it was
mm-hmm.
so ridiculous and so like insane. And I used to tell Fiona all the time, and she used to be like, dude, like, shut up, like,
yeah.
like, you're not, like,
yeah.
And she used to try and rationalize it with me and stuff and
mm-hmm.
talk me through it, and I used to be like, no, and I got obsessed with it, and that
mm-hmm.
was when I had my first proper panic attack, was to do that.
Really?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and do you know what,
yeah.
the funny thing with that was, I don't know if I ever talked about it on the podcast, but in the
mm-hmm.
end, my whole thing with that was that I was worried that if, I never had a sexual health check, I hadn't slept with a huge amount of people anyway, and I was pretty sure I didn't have anything, but then I built up in my mind that, like,
mm-hmm.
if I
yeah.
go and have a sexual health check, that my partner, my long-term partner, is going to assume I've cheated on them, because
of
why
course.
Wouldn't they?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then, so that was the master thing, was like, I don't want to tell them I'm doing it, but I don't want
yeah.
to go behind their back. Like, at the time, I didn't even know how the process was. I didn't know if I was going to get a wet or
mm-hmm.
a post or whatever, and, you know, they would find it, be like, why the fuck are you
yeah.
going to get it? So, like,
uh-huh.
it became a massive thing for me, and it went round in a circle, and then eventually led to, like, a breakdown,
mm-hmm.
which wasn't the one I talked about in the article. It was the one.
Okay, then you went and did it, and you're like, this is no big deal. Why have been
yeah, well,
for
honestly,
8 years
as soon as
Absolutely.
As soon as I came out of the clinic,
uh-huh.
I got the blood test and stuff.
Yeah.
I came out of the clinic and I was like, that's not fucking all me.
I mean,
you
know,
No, I remember the first time I went for a fucking sexual health
How
checkup.
How old were you? Just as a question, because I want to talk about it as well, but just for your ages when you first went to the clinic.
I was 21.
Fuck me.
Like,
what,
genuinely.
22, 23.
And,
okay.
And as a woman, like, that was the first time I was, like, on contraception as well.
Really?
Yeah, yeah, that was the first time. And when I went there, I was like, this is no fucking big deal. The nurses are fucking lovely.
Yeah.
Everyone's like, this is no big deal, you're fine.
Oh,
but,
I've had a variety
no,
of
like,
other experiences.
No, but, like, the first time I went there, and I was talking about something, they're like, there's no time limit on
various
what
illnesses,
you, what,
yeah.
No, what do you call it? Like, sexual, like violence. And I was like,
okay.
I honestly had never considered.
Mm-hmm.
I'd been so like And my wife was like, that's just normal.
Mm-hmm.
But I had just in passing mentioned a relationship with them. They're like,
okay.
There is no, they said to me straight up, there's like, there's no time limit on,
okay.
on rape, on sexual
assault. In terms of when you can report it to.
Yeah,
absolutely. And I was like, it wasn't until that point, I was like, I had no idea that was okay.
A thing.
Yeah, absolutely. That was a turning point for me.
I mean, I had a couple of different, I wanted to talk about it just because you brought up. I became sexually active when I was 14 due to rape, which I think a lot of people know anyway. I'm very open about it in my poetry and in past podcasts.
Yeah.
But I also did have a consensual sexual partner when I was 14, and it was wonderful, very beautiful. But I've been sexually active since then, and I would like to say with 100% confidence I had a sexual health check every year since then. Until I was 19, when I started doing them twice yearly.
Uh-huh.
And when I was 19, I started doing HIV tests yearly.
Mm.
Because, you know, I mean, I've had sex with a lot of people. I'm not in a high risk group, but quite like yourself, Nathan, I just became inappropriately paranoid.
Yep. Yeah.
For no good reason. And I would just rather go to a doctor and get a test than not.
Yeah.
And I think that just as a thing that I want to say is that please never think that anybody will find out, that you need to tell anybody if you don't want to, that it's invasive, that anything bad is going to happen. Like, honestly, you sit in a bathroom, do your own stuff, you hand it into a receptionist and you fuck off and you will get,
absolutely.
You know, a phone call.
Absolutely, unless you have something you want someone to look at.
Yeah, like unless you want someone to know, they're never going to know.
It's less invasive than going for a regular GP check.
Yeah.
Like, they make it so to the point where it's so just nothing.
Yeah.
And you know, they see 1,000 people a day.
But the thing is like, it's the same as smears. It's to the point where it's so British that it's almost
yes.
as if it's not actually happening. It's almost like,
oh my
yes,
God, I know.
You're not even sick. There's
I am
smaller
in your cervix.
It's totally fine.
Yeah,
my nurse was more uncomfortable than I was during my first smear because I was like, hey, do you want me to just take down my trousers? She was like, no, please go behind the screen. I was like, bitch, I'm a stripper. I'm just going to undress here. Like, she was like, your cervix is lovely in pink. And I'm like, thank you. And like, she was like,
to me.
She was like, I've never had anybody react like this to a smear. And I was like, no, this has been a good time, man. Thank you.
I went.
I had a lovely time.
It was fine. I had a very surly nurse, but she didn't say fuck all, so I just went home.
Nah, St. Macra's doctors, mate. It's all where it's at.
It's funny. I remember being in the waiting room for my one, and like, just getting there, like, made me feel so much better. And like, I was looking around at all the other people there, and this is...
Everyone's normal.
Yeah.
It was normal, but I just remember looking around at everyone being like, and they all really worried.
Yeah.
And I wasn't worried at this point, because deep down I knew I was fine.
Do you ever look at them and you're like, are they worried about sexual health conditions, or whether they got someone pregnant?
Yeah,
like,
well,
cute.
Yeah.
No, but to be fair, I will like to give a negative shout out to Aberdeen Gum Clinic, because fuck
my
you guys.
Had a bad
nah, like, I have only, I had, I went to the Gum Clinic a lot in Kirkcaldy Fife, which is now very sadly closed down. It's moved to a different facility. But they were lit.
Uh-huh.
Doctors, absolutely lit. Nurses, absolutely lit. Aberdeen Gum Clinic, I visited them twice.
Mm-hmm.
I went in just for a contraception thing. I just wanted the Depo-Provera, which is the injection in your bottom for contraception. It lasts 3 months.
In your bottom?
In your bottom.
That sounds a lot easier than taking one a day.
Well, to be honest, I mean, I've had my third implant, so we're talking like the best part of 8 years, and my current implant is making me break through to fuck, gain weight, and feel very not okay.
No, I'm really
I'm
okay.
Having,
I've had nothing with mine.
No, I've had an allergic reaction to my third and last one currently. So I'm going to go back and remove it. But the last time, many moons ago, that I went to the gum clinic, I was like, hey there, friends. Just want to get some Depo. How's it going? And they were like, chill, fill out this form. So they were like, yeah, have you ever had sex
with
somebody?
You've been drunk twice in 1 month? You need to see someone.
No, not at all. It was just your standard question. Like, have you slept with somebody who isn't from this country? Yes. Have you ever been raped? Yes. Have you ever slept with a bisexual man? Yes. You know, and
I feel so exotic when I take yes to those.
I mean, so did fucking I until I was treated like a leper.
Oh.
And I went into this clinic and I'm like, I feel like if you hate women and their sexual histories, like, why work in a clinic at all in this sort of capacity? And she was like, okay, so, like, we feel like you're pregnant, you have HIV, you have, like, SIF. You have, like, all the hip, every hip that's ever existed, you have it. We're going to do a pregnancy test. We're going to take all your fucking
Jesus
blood.
Christ.
We're going to give you a full panel. Like, And also, like, that's really cool.
That makes you scared.
No, but the thing is that I'm not trying to say NHS because that shit is free.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, NHS.
Uh-huh.
But PS, fuck this person with their bedside manner. And I'm a strong individual. Like, I've done a lot of difficult jobs in my life, and I burst out in a crying because she was so mean to me. And I wasn't pregnant, and I didn't have any fucking STDs, and I got my depo anyway. But, like, I was in there for half an hour for a 5-minute appointment because that person judged the shit out of me.
Do you know what's funny? Like, sorry.
No, please, please, go ahead.
See, when I went in with the guy, so I've done the forms, and like I said, you were saying you guys filled them in also as well. I did as well.
Yeah, it's the same questions.
And the guy sat me down, and he was like, so you were in the low-risk category.
Yeah.
He's like, but I'm going to check you for everything anyway.
Because you haven't had one, though.
Yeah, and I almost felt like he was just like, he got me, just sort of just like, he was just sort of like, you just sort of need a bit of like, he knew why, almost knew why I was there. He was like, you need a bit, just a bit of reassurance.
But if you haven't had an STD check at your age, like, I would have done the same.
Yeah, totally.
But, like, I'd had one 12 months before.
Maybe that's just how I perceived, I'm not negating your experience. I'm just saying.
No, I know you're not.
With him, it was just like, he almost, for me, that was like a massive thing. He got why I was,
yeah.
Even if he didn't, the way I perceived his reaction was he. And
I think for me, like, I've always gone in for SCD panels as a full SCD panel. Yep. And I think if she had just phrased it as, I would like to give you a full SCD panel just for your benefit of mind, because you are maybe in a risk zone, you know, or you maybe not had one in a while, I'd be like, tight, like, shoot me up.
Yeah.
But I think it was the way that she had gone about it, where it was very, she actually made a homophobic joke as well at one point, because I said I slept with women, and it was just a very detrimental experience. But I would say that I would like to say that I've been in a SCD situation, like testing for, not because I have symptoms, but because I'm proactive.
Yes.
I've done that 10 times and only one time was like a piece of shit. So like, if that's the most you have to deal with to make sure that you don't have an illness.
It's free. Yes, absolutely.
And it's free as fuck. Like, it's worth it.
I might even just be a good nurse on a bad day, do what I mean?
Absolutely.
No, I met her another time. She was still a dick.
Okay, fair enough.
But you just meet people that are dickish, like... Again, for your own fucking health and for the health of the people that you love and care about, or people that you're just meeting in institute, please, for God's sake, check your goddamn health, man. It's so worthwhile.
I've been a couple of times and I fucking love the nurses, like, to the point where I'm like, maybe I could work here.
I always wanted to be a nurse.
They're so fucking blasé about, like, imagine if you had, like...
Jaundice.
Imagine if you had, like, boy,
what's your story?
Boy parts with fucking, like... problems, they'd just be like, yeah, just looking at your dick, got discharged, but whatever. I'm like, Sheila.
It's because I'm a gene of Gene, like, leaving the clinic, just going to the storeroom and finding like a white jacket, just put it on, just like knocking someone out and being like, this is my studio, my clinic
this
now.
This is Dr. Gray.
Nah, I've always been in a bit of gyno, I'll be fucking honest. I just like them.
Mm.
I just love health professionals.
Folk who
They're
work
so useful.
In Yeah, that's it. Like by like
they're patient,
First responders as well, like ambulance folk, fire folk. They're so fucking blasé with everything.
There was
so like whatever.
There was one time I was in A. This is so off topic. There was one time I was at A&E, and it was somebody else that was unwell, and I was there as a friend. And he had asked my friend what job she did, and we both responded, "Oh, we're both strippers." And the guy was like, "Okay, chill. We just need to run some exams." And at the very end of his sort of dealing with us, because we were getting referred to a different department, he was like, "Hey, like, what strip club do you guys work in? Like, I kind of like to come visit sometime." And I was like, "Fucking really?
Always not.
Why not though?"
But so do you know what? Sometimes that's what makes you feel like the person treating you as a human being. And
oh yes. Fuck my god!
Oh,
no, he wasn't weird at all. It was funny.
Yeah,
it was funny.
What I mean,
yeah.
Like,
Yeah. We gave him our card and everything.
I see. So what we got? Two more points, but do you know what? Even if we've run off topic a lot in this next half hour, 40 minutes, I think we've done it right, because I think we've stuck pretty on topic tonight.
I hope we've been okay. I would like to believe.
I'm actually impressed with
myself. Oh, is that it? Yes, let's talk about suicide. No.
Let's get dark.
We can do. We've got two more points though, and
what would you like to pick, Nathan? You've not picked yet.
Well,
there's one point
that's kind of a joke point, so I'm gonna leave that for last. But there's a question. This is the second question that was sent in. It was from the whoever, I don't know who the person is.
Who do you get questions from?
Or who the people
from?
Are.
Human beings.
What? You're fucking
high. This is like linking with this person's Instagram. So this is an Instagram account, or these people's, I don't know who runs it. But it's an Instagram account called About Aberdeen, and they do like nice posts of like quizzes and
stuff.
Oh,
they sound cute.
But they asked...
It's going to get uncute.
Like, whereabouts in Aberdeen do you go and visit to alleviate anxiety?
Oh, I remember you telling me this. My fucking nest, i.e. my bed.
not out with them.
Central Library.
Oh, I love a library. I love a library.
That's my favourite place to study. Like, out with uni libraries. It just... But if you go too often, you start to recognise regulars and... weird old men started talking to me. I was like, oh,
yeah, but that's misogyny. That's not mental health.
I was like, why the fuck? I've got headphones in. Why are people asking me for fucking legal advice? I'm in first year of law.
I love the central. Do you mean the one like King's Majesty, the one next to that?
Yes.
I recently became a member only about 6 months ago. Adore it.
Yep.
But I agree with you in terms of library about my ex-university library where I spent not a giant amount of time because I'm naturally intelligent and a piece of shit and never attended class, but I did used to go there fairly often. And the wonderful thing about that for me was that although I was going there for a purpose, i.e. to study and to do stuff or print anything off, it was like a home away from home where I felt warm and comfortable and safe, but I also had that like productivity ingrained in me in a way that like wasn't problematic. I didn't feel like I was being forced. Like I'd chosen to be there and I was in that environment and I just felt comfortable to like learn and do things. Whereas for me, I think that I've often written essays and I've often studied in the house and that although I've gotten great grades.
I can't study at home. I can't.
I've done it a lot, like mainly because I panicked the night before, but like I've gotten great A's, like, you know, I've gotten A's or I've gotten good grades, but like it's just fucking dread. I'm like, I'm in my kitchen. It's fucking letting
you
on
is the fact you think you're gonna die if you don't do
it. Oh my god, like pure anxiety driven fucking despair. And it's not positive. And like there's a reason I don't spend a lot of time in my kitchen other than when I'm cooking, podcasting, or fucking
my kitchen is fucking freezing. Like the heater does not work.
This is an old ass house. I'm surprised you're not cold.
Anyway,
yes, that is a pushing blanket.
Is it from Primark?
It was like £6.
I'm gonna buy it. Central Library. I started going there because I was doing a part-time course on top of my full-time course because I'm a cunt. I started going to Central Library to study because I can't fucking study at home. Like, absolutely not. Like, I will sit in my bed for 4 hours and stare at the wall and cry rather than study. But if I go to Central Library, which is like 5 minutes from my house, I will sit down and do 2 hours study. And that's it. And then I'm just doing my, like, it's so, I've just like separated it from my regular full-time study that it's fine.
Do you like it better because there isn't as many other students there?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, like I did say to Rebecca earlier, like, if you go at the same times each week, you start to see the same
people.
I'm not saying weirdos, but like, there are certain people who go to the library at certain times, and it opens late twice a week. And there was one guy who was filing a complaint against his driving instructor, who was like, "Oh, you study law? Help me with my small complaint." I was like, "I don't know who you are, and I have headphones in." And there was another guy who was just like, "What's your name?" I was like, "It's Jean." He was like, "Don't forget to enjoy your youth." I was like, thanks, guy.
But I think that's the thing. I don't like people like going, I've got headphones and I hate when people start talking to me.
Unless if you're a woman, it happens like, 10 times more, I promise.
I can imagine,
you.
But I...
why?
But I just like...
I tweet about that shit.
The only time I think it's acceptable is if you're like a bus stop or something, you're like, do you know when you're...
No, when people talk to me at bus stops, I'm like, I don't care if you're an international master's student at Aberdeen Uni and you're studying business.
No, I feel like I get sexually harassed so much. It's never women. It's never women.
When you start
men.
Working the bar when you're 18, you're like, this is normal.
It's not fucking normal.
I worked in a nightclub where the management, I had forgotten my keys, they're like, oh, you can't work at the bar, you have to do like pick up glasses from the floor. And they're like, I was like, oh, people keep feeling my bum. They only had the boys on the floor because,
relatable content.
Yeah, but they're like, oh, you have to go on the floor because you didn't remember your till key. And I was like, people feel my bum on the floor, like, wear two aprons.
Fuck
wear
off,
one apron on your arse, one
fuck
on front.
Off.
I can't believe I didn't report them for that.
No,
I was
like
18 at the time.
I went up. I didn't realise that sexual harassment was something I should No, I didn't realise it should be something that I shouldn't have to deal with until I became a stripper and there was a price literally on my ass that you can't even touch.
Uh-huh.
Like you cannot legally touch a stripper in the UK. You are committing
a fucking
assault and a fucking crime if you touch
and
a dancer.
Strippers have more rights than barmaids, right?
No, you're an individual. If you don't like it, fuck you. Like, but no, I'm just saying, like, Even if if I was your stripper, for instance, and you were getting a lap dance, you'd be like, hey, I'm a little bit drunk, can I touch your titty? Nah. I'd be like, I mean, even if I wanted you to touch my titty, you can, because it's illegal to touch a sex worker in the UK in that capacity as a stripper. Actually? Oh, fuck
I study law and I don't know.
Oh, fuck it. You cannot touch a stripper in any capacity.
Makes me want to touch them more.
I know, right? That's why I get to touch myself. That's the loophole.
Do you want to offer a... It's not really a, I don't know if it's a funny
story. Go on.
But it's, there was one time where I was out and I was working it out and I didn't get ejected from a club, but I left a club. And then I went to work on, I didn't go to work. I got a text the next day from a girl I worked with being like, oh, so you disappeared last night. I was like, oh yeah, I think I got kicked out. She was like, oh yeah, I heard that. I heard you slapped a shop girl's bum.
Where were you?
It was Club T.
Oh, no. Okay.
And I was like, obviously mortified with myself. Yeah, and I was like, so like gutted about it, and I was like, who told you this? And he was like, oh, this guy who I was told me that you did this. And I was like, all right. And then I told my partner at the time, my current partner, and she was obviously fucking furious, understandably so.
But at least you were honest.
But like, so I was totally gutted about it. And then as the hangover sort of faded, and it got to, so that would be the Sunday, and it got to Monday, I was like, I really don't think I did this, lad.
You don't seem like the type of cunt.
So I was like, I'm going to trace this back. And then as like, you know, when sometimes when you're hungover, you don't remember the night before, but things come back to you.
Yeah.
I was like,
fear.
I was like, I'm pretty sure I remember going out for a smoke and trying to get back in. And the bouncer said, no, mate, you're too drunk. Just head home. So I traced this rumor back, and I was like, essentially, I got the bottom of it. And they'd been like, oh, well, we noticed you weren't there, and there was showgirls, and maybe that was what you'd done. And I was like...
Oh, it was a presumption. Really sexist presumption, that as a man, you got kicked out of a club because you assaulted a woman. That's deeply problematic. Speaking about places in Aberdeen that we go when we're not feeling great, I'm glad you're here, Jean. Hello.
Greg's.
fucking emo Greg's in Dunfermline that has a black sign rather than a blue sign.
Fucking close the Greg's next to my house.
No, I was going to say that I don't know if you're bad or good for this, Nathan. I feel like, Jean, as a woman, you may be more on the page of me.
Uh-huh.
I know for a fact that when I go to work and I have a good payday and I feel good about myself for being able to go to work and achieving something, I like to go to the goddamn shops. And, like, that might just be looking at things. It might be buying a couple of things.
I can't go to shops without buying something, though. Like, buying doesn't
it makes me feel sad, to not buy anything.
Okay. Uh-huh.
But even if I buy, like, fucking paperweights or, like, one top or fucking... Even if I'm, like, I'm going to Savers and I'm buying bleach for the house or, like, just stuff.
Yes, absolutely.
Do you know what I mean?
Like, I am making a positive impact into my
house. Yeah, like, I am self-caring in a way that I am making my home an easier place to live in. Do you know what
absolutely.
I mean? Like, that's a big thing for me. Not Aberdeen specifically, unfortunately, but just as a concept in town and about for me.
Yeah, I don't know if I've got anywhere specific to Aberdeen now.
I don't know where I'd ride sometimes.
Suicide Beach.
Yeah. sometimes go to the gym.
Yeah.
I guess when I'm feeling shit and punch things.
I used to love the gym.
Makes you feel better. Yeah, absolutely.
So we covered that. So we're on our last point, which was Gordon Ramsay. That's all I've got written.
Did you just literally write Gordon Ramsay?
Yeah, that's what I speak about.
Okay,
Gordon Ramsay.
So what's your favourite Gordon Ramsay abuse thing? For me personally, and this isn't mental health related at all.
I didn't expect to be too much about Gordon Ramsay mental health, but I just thought it was a funny topic.
I mean, shit. I told my partner that he used to have a bit of a problem being a Spice Boy.
Spice Boy.
You know, he's a rugby player, he's a normie, he was a Spice Boy, God love him. But, like, he used to, like, flirt incessantly with people and send literally the same, like, sentence to them on Tinder, and it was just, I fucking pissed myself, it was quite bad. And I was like, why did you never flirt with me, Blair? Why did you never do anything? So now he's taken to doing weird Gordon Ramsay quotes to me, but making them sexual. So I was trying to speak to him about...
already?
It's fucking weird. Like, I love it because I'm demented. But, like, it's fucking weird. So I was speaking to him this morning about, like, oh, why don't you just have a sandwich before you go to work if you're hungry? And he was like, I can think of a sausage sandwich. I'll give you. It's just fucking, like, idiot sandwich. Me. Idiot fucking sandwich, though. So that's my contribution.
I just love G. Ramsay, man. I just love...
He's amazing.
The only thing I don't like about Gordon Ramsay, and this might be controversial. No, it's... Well, this is kind of a funny point, is that he's a massive Rangers man.
Did he play for Rangers?
Well, no, this is what I was going to get to.
Okay, well,
like on his Wikipedia. He claims that he played for Rangers and that's like, that he got a career-ending injury and he couldn't, But there's like,
so he's a chef now.
So yeah, yeah, really? That's why he went cooking. But there's like things he's been like, there's things for them like outside Ibrox, which is the Rangers Stadium, and being, okay, being like, yeah, this is where I learned to cut my. I don't know why he's not got a Scottish accent anymore.
Yeah,
like,
what the fuck?
This is where I learned my most important lessons about being a chef. Is Ibrox. No, and he like, goes on about how like the discipline of being like, playing a professional footballer. But then if you go to his Wikipedia, it's like, Gordon Ramsay has claimed he played for Rangers in these capacities, whereas Rangers FC have said there is no record of Gordon Ramsay ever having played for Rangers.
But, like, he is, like, deeply problematic. Like, he makes fucking sexist... I mean, I love him. I do. But he makes, like, deeply misogynistic and deeply sexist comments. And then, like, see when he cooks with kids, it's like, oh, darling. Right. She's like, burnt the fuck out of every side of a pancake. Oh, you're amazing. You're brilliant. You're going to do great. You're going to go far. An adult makes...
Mm-hmm.
A semi-shitey scallop. You fucking hot! Like, it's totally different. It's amazing.
Do I love to do on this podcast as someone that's been on one of those shows?
Yeah. You should fucking contact everyone.
I'd love to. Because
I imagine.
The other one I thought about is, you know, the Apprentice. Like,
yeah.
The pressure. And, like, everyone watches these shows and you think, these people are, like, put themselves out there as these professionals and they're so shit. I bet they're not shit.
Years, aye.
But I bet what happened is that the amount of pressure that gets put on you is you just make stupid, like...
I don't know, mistakes. I mean, we're talking about a level of incompetency that has never been seen except for in very specific cases in our own personal jobs where we go, that fanny's a cunt, and they're not under any sort of international TV pressure, so...
That fanny's a cunt.
Yeah, you know I mean?
So, like...
The truest roundabout statement that's ever been made. Aye, meta as fuck.
Right, so we've covered all the points that we've got written down. Is there anything else we want to talk about before we wrap up?
I mean, you screamed suicide, but I don't know if you want to do that. Limo.
If y'all want to talk about it.
I don't know, do we want to end on a light note or a bad note?
Well, we've still got time. We've still got like loads of time, so we can talk about
it. Have you ever had a really frank discussion about just the realities of suicide? You must
with yourself, well, Nathan, suicide. Nathan,
yeah.
As in terms of like suicide.
Someone just sat there for fucking 10 minutes straight and gone, "Aye, suicide." Yeah, I mean, yeah, you can have. Nathan has a bottle of wine.
There's still one there, isn't it?
Please top me up.
Oh shit, son. There you go. Yeah, here's some wine, Jean. You can talk about suicide.
Shit. Red, like the blood of Christ.
Yay! Do you want any more, hun?
I'm ours now.
Okay.
No, for going deep.
Okay, well, let's start with a round robin of how many suicide attempts have we all had? I think I'm at 7.
I've never actually done it, but...
Oh, wow, good for you.
Good for me, right?
Honestly, good for you.
Last summer, I thought I was going to die. Like, if not by myself, then I just thought I was going to die. I've never felt worse in my life. Stopped eating, I stopped sleeping. It was really, like, difficult to say, but, like...
Was that your... I don't want to be, like, too frank, but was that your breakup?
Yeah, okay. Breakup / P.S. you have ADHD. P.S. we can't treat you for it because you've got a fucking heart condition.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
Just, like, my whole physical health, my mental health, it was just fucking terrible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. I was like, what the fuck am I alive for?
It's really difficult.
Absolutely, yeah.
I mean, I had a couple when I was a teenager, just out of... Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'd been... I think the thing, like, for myself is that... I have a lot more of a varied experience of mental health problems since I was probably about 19, 20, where I do have periods where I am relatively okay, I do have periods of depression, and I do have periods of mania.
Mm-hmm.
But when I was a teenager, from the age of about 10 for 7 years until I was 17, it literally was just depression, and I was lucky if I had 1 week out of every 6 where I felt capable. Uh-huh. Do you know what I mean? It was really fucking overwhelming. And I'm actually very surprised that I didn't attempt anything sooner than I did. So, you know, big ups to me, I suppose. But I had a couple of suicide attempts when I was about 17, all within about 3 or 4 weeks of one another. I've sporadically attempted it in my 20s. You can call it a cry for help. You can call it just being shit at day in it. You can call it whatever you want.
Yeah, can I ask you a difficult question?
Of course, please.
Did you intend to follow through with it?
Yes, every time.
You thought it was going to work?
I hoped it would work.
Mm-hmm.
The problem about being a chronic drug and drink abuser is that you do gain an incredibly high tolerance.
Yep.
So the first time that I tried to commit suicide, I took 40 aspirin, And I did whitey up, literally nothing but white foam for 3 days, and that was awful. But
did you go to hospital?
No, no, I've never been to hospital because I've been too scared. I have a huge paranoia about being sectioned, even though that would probably be quite helpful. I have a huge paranoia about it. So no, I've never actively sought treatment. I was too afraid of it. But in my 20s, when I've taken pills or self-harmed, my body, and this sounds very depressing, my body is so used to it by now that, I mean, God, for me to be able to achieve that, I would have to go to great lengths. And
absolutely.
For, you know, very great reasons, there aren't enough pills in the house for that.
That's mm-hmm. I know for a fact that as a suicide attempt, taking an overdose is the worst because...
Oh my God, it's multi-organ failure days afterwards.
It's,
yeah.
People take it, realise they don't want to die, but it's too late. It's too late.
Absolutely.
It's just heartbreaking, really.
I mean, the first time I did it, I looked up the effects of an aspirin overdose after the effect, and it said, yeah, I mean, you don't know if you're going to die until about 3 days later.
Yes.
You know, and then all your organs were shut down. It's incredibly painful, incredibly slow. Obviously, that didn't happen.
It's like having asbestos poisoning.
Oh my God, yeah. Absolutely. But I think, like, again, obviously, like, I knew that at the time, and I deeply regretted my choice of how I did it. I didn't regret doing it in the first place, but I did regret how I did it.
Was there anything that stopped you? Like, anything you felt that stopped you doing it?
Do you know, the thing was, is that the first time I did it, there wasn't a particular trigger. I'd just been sick for 7 years, and I had been in pain for 7 years.
I had a
headache one day, and I just went into the cabinet where all the drugs were stored in my parents' house, and they were away for the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And I took 2 aspirin for my headache, and I just kept, it was like an impulse. I just kept taking the pills, and then I couldn't stop. And I said to myself, look how easy this is.
It's the pain that you can't.
But that's the problem. That was it.
You can't rationalise this pain. You can't describe this pain to
no
one, to anyone who hasn't felt it. It's something beyond physical.
I mean, I'm a fucking writer, and
like,
I couldn't fucking tell somebody. No way.
I've fucking broken my ankle before. Like, it's not that pain. It's not the physical pain. It's this something unbearable that you can't describe to anyone. You just don't want to inflict the feeling on anyone else.
I agree. And I think that's why I'm so empathetic. And
yeah.
I do lash out, and I do make selfish choices. But I do believe that integrally, I'm not actually that bad a person.
Yep.
Because I just don't wish any kind of pain on anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Because I understand integrally how... I say integrally all the time. I know how it feels to feel tortured and to feel helpless and to feel in agony. And I just physically and mentally can't inflict that on somebody. I can't.
I remember the pain of telling...
Are you laughing at me? You disagree?
No, I was just laughing. I thought there was like so much... I didn't realise how much wine was in there. I was just like, I'll just finish this. Oh my God.
Oh, sorry, pal.
No, I remember I felt guilty telling my family. Like, no, but like, I couldn't help it. I was like, I want to die. And the only thing stopping me was like, imagine how sad your mum's going to be if you die.
Like,
literally that one thread holding me on.
Yeah, I mean, for me, like, my mum used to love to threaten to section me when I wasn't actually that bad, and that's like...
I think I said that in the podcast earlier. Yeah.
I mean, that's
like...
that's an instance of emotional abuse.
Uh-huh.
But for me nowadays, for the past 4 months, obviously because I live with my partner, for me it's a case of, like, this is, like, my house legally, like, his name isn't on the lease, and I'm like, what the fuck would he do finding the love of his life dead...
Yep.
And then realising also the legal stuff of, like, where am I going to live once I announce this body? Like, I just couldn't do that to somebody.
Do you ever find that's... If you're feeling depressed or anxious or whatever, that keeps you going more than your own
survival. Absolutely.
The fact other people are relying on you.
I'll be really... this isn't something I'm proud of for obvious fucking reasons. My last suicide attempt was in January. I tried to top myself with... various things. It was pretty severe. And even after what I'd done, which was pretty severe, what I'd done to be like, I came home from a night out with my partner. I knew that I wanted to hurt myself, and he said that he had a sore stomach, and I said, oh, I'll give you some aspirin or I'll give you some ibuprofen. I gave him 2 sleeping pills so that he would basically pass out so that I could do what I wanted to do without basically him stopping me. That's horrifying. And again, obviously, I went ahead and did a lot of stuff that really did hurt my body physically, but I stopped before I did anything that I thought would actually, you know, finish me off. And it was completely and utterly to do with the fact that he was sleeping in the next room and I loved him so much and I couldn't bear hurting him. Didn't give a shit about myself, But the thought of him, you know, having to deal with that, having to go through that, I couldn't. I fucking couldn't, physically.
Yeah, do you know what, it's funny, we go, links back to the live podcast with Hubby. You remember you were there, and Hubby was saying that he, like, quite often the thing keeps him going is he'll be working on an album.
Yeah.
And he'd be like, I will get this album out and see how that does, and then, like, if this, we'll see, I'm curious to see how the album does, so I'll wait until we see how the album pans out.
Yeah.
And then I'll kill myself. And then, like, he does the album, then he posts the album, goes out, and then he starts working on the next one. He's like, no, I'll just wait and see how this one does. But I've had the stupidest thoughts. Like, when Trainspotting 2, the film, was in the works, and I've been thinking, like, at my lowest point, I've been thinking, I want to fucking, like, fuck this album. I've been thinking, like,
But you've got to see this.
I really want to watch Trainspotting 2, and it's out in 5 months, and 5 months is going to be tough for me to keep going for 5 months, but...
Sometimes that's all it is.
Yeah, so you can do it,
But these are things that you never...
Sometimes it's only the tiny things
that you're doing.
But I think that's the thing when you're sick. Like, it is, again, it's like what I said about the...
Nothing's rational. The
appreciation for the tiny things, and you have such a loose link to reality a lot of the time that something like a film or a book or a project that you're personally doing, like, is going to be the thing that carries you through the next few weeks. And maybe at that point, you do feel okay. Well, and that's very real.
Absolutely, that's the thing. When I was at my absolute lowest, the thing that kept me going was the thought of helping other people.
Mm.
I started volunteering without, like, heaps. I don't say heaps. Like, several charities. Because I was like, if I can't look after myself, I can look after other people.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing that was making me want to, like, get up in the morning was the fact that I was making a difference to other people.
Absolutely.
Like, those people who made a difference to me. It sounds really corny, but, like...
It doesn't,
absolutely.
It doesn't, like...
The only thing that was keeping me going was not looking after myself, but looking after other people.
Like, for me, like, the English Literature Society was a... in a lot of ways, I didn't create it, but in a lot of ways for the past year, it was my baby, where I could platform people who were sick, who needed to say things, and I could do charity drives, and I could donate money to things like food banks and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, fucking hell, Nathan, you do this podcast, like...
Yeah.
Clearly, we are all invested in helping other people
for
whatever reason. Do you know what I mean? And I think that's fucking minted.
I talked about this with Steve yesterday about, like, people sometimes ask me, like, do you make money off this? And I'm like, no, it probably costs. I mean, I have made money off it.
Yeah.
Bits of money. I've not covered my costs. I've definitely lost money.
Yeah, overall.
A significant amount of money.
So have I, shit.
Well, that's
not from this, but, like, from my own stuff that I've done.
That's the reason I don't have a part-time job, is because I spend 2 days a week volunteering. Do you know what I mean?
But I think that's so worthwhile.
But do you
it's better for your soul than your wallet.
Corporate bastards.
And I don't know what I would do if I wasn't doing this. Do you know what I mean? Like, I've played in bands since I was 12, 13, and before that I was wanting to play in bands. I was just too young.
Mm-hmm.
And I would write and stuff, and I've always had something I was focused on. And, for me, I'm not the kind of person that can just have a job, go to work, go home, watch TV, go to the gym, you know, and not have something to focus,
it's not enough.
I need something that I can think about when I'm not even doing it,
mm-hmm.
to keep myself occupied,
because
otherwise, I just think about terrible
fucking
thing.
Alright, well, that's all you're getting. I cut that one off a little bit before the end, I felt it got to where it needed to be. So I hope you enjoyed it. I really enjoyed recording that one, actually. Like, the whole day was really good fun, apart from the power cut in my flat, which I think was mentioned a couple of times throughout that podcast, and Jean's one, which was really shit. Right, I was really trying to use shit as a verb there. Like, who knows, guys? I'm in a rush, and when I'm in a rush, things never go well, so I'm just going to stop talking. Next week, the podcast will be with, I think, Steve Murison. So that's another great one. It was recorded the day before this one. And me and Steve got on super well. And I think you'll enjoy that podcast. So come back for that one. And thanks to everyone for listening. Cheers.